This is Full-Time Catholic Radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit.
Well, thanks so much for being with me. I'm Al Cresta, and we've got 2 hours where we try to talk about the things that matter most. Yesterday, if you recall, I talked about this new book coming out, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI and Cardinal Robert Seurat, Out of the Depth of Our Hearts. It's about priestly celibacy, clearly being published to help influence the discussion going on within the Church about clerical celibacy. And Pope Francis is going to be weighing in on the topic before too long, because he has promised to deliver an apostolic exhortation following up on the Pan-Amazonian Synod of late last year. So this is going to be a valuable book. However, much to everybody's surprise, the secretary of Pope Emeritus Benedict sent out a text claiming that Pope Benedict should not be presented as co-author of this new book on priestly celibacy, and that he has, in fact, asked for his name and photo to be removed from the cover. Ignatius Press, who is the U.S. publisher, plans to go with its original plans to have Francis and Seurat on the cover. We're going to talk with J.D. Flynn about this. It's a tempest in a teapot, I'm sure, but still, since people are talking about it, we should at least try to get as accurate information as possible. So that's coming up. Now, also coming up today, we're going to talk to Dr. Monica Miller about an upcoming Planned Parenthood protest. In Southeast Michigan, Planned Parenthood has received $500,000 in Oakland County, $100,000 in Washtenaw County, and its citizens should be concerned about this. More coming up. Also, we're going to do a social science apologetics segment on the incredible success story behind one county's plummeting divorce rate. And then we look at the religious life of Benjamin Franklin. So stay tuned. But first, the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. For Tuesday, January 14th, it's the Feast of St. Macrina the Elder. Today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria's Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Archbishop Georg Ganswein, the private secretary for Pope Emeritus Benedict, says the former pontiff was not informed that he would be presented as a co-author of a new book being released this week with contributions from Cardinal Robert Seurat, and that Benedict has asked his name and photo to be removed from the cover. Ganswein says Benedict did not co-author the introduction and conclusion, but that the chapter in the main part of the book is, quote, 100% Benedict. Cardinal Seurat said this afternoon that future editions of the book will list him alone as the author, with a contribution by Benedict XVI. Quote, however, the full text remains absolutely unchanged. J.D. Flynn has more in the first hour with Al coming up. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi confirms that the House will authorize impeachment managers and will send the articles of impeachment to the Senate tomorrow. In a statement, Pelosi called on the Senate to conduct a fair trial. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he may invite Supreme Court Justice John Roberts over this week to discuss the impeachment trial. Nebraska's governor is declaring a day of prayer. Republican Pete Ricketts announcing last week that January 22nd will be a day of prayer in Nebraska. January 22nd is the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. While releasing the proclamation, Ricketts also said that Nebraska is a pro-life state. He urged Nebraskans to pray for an end to abortion and for others who need love and support. Apple is refusing a Justice Department request to help unlock the Pensacola shooter's 2 iPhones. A Saudi Air Force officer shot and killed 3 people and injured 8 others last month at the Pensacola Naval Air Station in Florida. Apple rejected Attorney General William Barr's assertion that it has not provided substantive assistance in the case, saying it has provided, quote, gigabytes of information to law enforcement. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Yesterday, we were talking about this forthcoming book that's co-authored by Pope Emeritus Benedict and Cardinal Robert Seurat that addresses priestly celibacy and the nature of the priesthood. Well, today, Benedict's secretary, Archbishop Ganswein, said that Benedict doesn't want the book to appear as having been co-authored by him. Now, J.D. Flynn is editor-in-chief of Catholic News Agency and a canon lawyer, and he's served as special assistant to Bishop Connolly in the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. And he's been looking at this little twist in the story, and I've asked him to join me today to just clarify what's going on. J.D., good to have you back here. Thanks.
Hey, Al, how are you?
I'm doing great. I would like to point out to people that this is the kind of story which probably 30, 40 years ago we wouldn't have bothered covering because we wouldn't have known about this kind of internal tug going on somewhere in Rome. What the heck is going on here?
Well, it's quite a back and forth, and you're right that we wouldn't have covered it 30, 40 years ago. We wouldn't have known about it. In fact, I'm not sure we would have covered it 15 years ago because it's playing out. I mean, this is a sort of internal Vatican tussle that's playing out largely, or at least to some extent, on Twitter, which is a sort of an unusual thing and a jarring juxtaposition in some ways.
Sure.
But this is a book whose very existence we found out about, most people found out about on Sunday, and it's a book that is on the topic of priestly celibacy and sort of the theological foundations of priestly celibacy, the pastoral considerations of priestly celibacy, and then just a vision of healthy priesthood. And so the way the book is structured is it's got an introduction, a conclusion, and then a chapter written by Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, and then a chapter written by Cardinal Seurat, who's the prefect of the Congregation for Divine Worship and the Sacraments, the Vatican Liturgy Office.
Mm-hmm.
And the book was announced on Sunday, and by yesterday there were news reports sort of emanating from some European journalists who were suggesting that Benedict did not or may not have had as much of a hand in producing the thing as was originally suggested. And people saying that they had sources close to Benedict who said he hadn't really co-authored the book. The introduction and conclusion, which were attributed both to him and to Cardinal Seurat, people saying he hadn't really worked on that, and that all he had really done perhaps was to give Cardinal Seurat some notes. So once those news reports emerged, Cardinal Seurat responded by tweeting pictures of some correspondence between him and Benedict XVI, in which the former Holy Father says that he had been trying to write something on the priesthood, and he thought that he wouldn't be able to do it, but in talking with Cardinal Seurat, he'd been inspired to see the importance of it, and so he wrote an essay on the priesthood, and then there was another letter in which he told Cardinal Seurat that he was very happy with some edits that the Cardinal had done on his chapter, and he was very happy for it to be published, and he talked about a text that he was very happy to see published in the way that Cardinal Seurat had presented it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where things get controversial, because shortly after that, Benedict's personal secretary, Archbishop Georg Ganswein, released a statement in which he said there was confusion. Benedict did write the chapter that he is supposed to have written, but he didn't see the cover of the book. He didn't give permission for him to be listed as a co-author. He didn't participate in writing the introduction and the conclusion. And Ganswein said that Benedict would not like to be listed as the co-author of the book, and so mm-hmm. he wanted the publishers to change the title. Well, Seurat responded by saying no. He had, in fact, discussed the whole thing with Benedict, that they had written letters about it, that they had visited personally about it in early December, and that Benedict was supportive and willing. Seurat then tweeted and said that he didn't want there to be ongoing controversy, and he said further polemics about the book. So he was going to call the French publisher of the book and ask them not to list Benedict as a co-author, but as a contributor, and not to accredit him with the introduction and the conclusion. That was the sort of most of the controversy, and then today Ignatius Press, which is the U.S. publisher of the book and a regular publisher both of Cardinal Seurat and of the theological works of Benedict XVI and Joseph Ratzinger, said that as far as they were concerned, the text that they had been given said that it was co-authored, that they each had written a chapter, and that Cardinal Seurat had said they'd collaborated on the introduction and conclusion, and they weren't going to change that. And so there's this quagmire, there's this sort of stalemate, it seems, about how this book is being presented and how it's being understood. And, of course, that's all very interesting, and there are commentators who are making a lot of hay about it and saying, well, Seurat misled Benedict, or Benedict, you know, shouldn't have done this. But the truth is, however all that quagmire is worked out, Benedict did write a chapter in the book. No one disputes that, and mm-hmm. Seurat did too. And hopefully those chapters will get some consideration instead of just this controversy.
Sure. And do we know, did Benedict contribute anything to the introduction or conclusion?
Well, that's what's at a point of debate at this point.
Okay.
Seurat says that he did, and Ganswein says that he didn't.
Okay. This takes place against the backdrop, of course, of Pope Francis considering the Amazonian Synod and the You know, the discussion about these, the virus probati, these tested men that might be able to be fairly quickly ordained to deal, in order to deal with, they married men, in order to deal with the lack of priests in the Amazonian region. Are people trying to, should we see this response of Pope Emeritus Benedict and Cardinal Seurat as an attempt to influence Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation as a follow-up to the synod, the Amazonian synod?
Well, yeah, I think it's fair to see it as certainly a contribution to the discussion about celibacy that's going on because of the Pan-Amazonian synod. And in fact, the introduction to the book, you know, is clear about that.
Okay.
You know, there was this media confusion about celibacy at the time of the synod, and we wanted to weigh in with some theological ideas about celibacy. Now, there are people who say, well, it's inappropriate for Benedict to weigh in on anything that Francis is considering, but that's not what Francis has said, of course. Francis has said a number of times, Benedict has wisdom and experience and is a bishop and has a right to participate in the life of the church and should do so. And so that idea that, you know, because Francis is considering these ideas, Benedict shouldn't be talking about them, that's not an idea that, that comes from Francis or represents his way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything polemical about the book or aggressive about it?
I have seen a draft of the book and of the editing of the book and read through some of it, and it's a theological treatise.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, it's a good theological treatise. It's sort of classic Benedict. The Benedictine chapter is classic Benedict, you know, a systematic review through scripture and tradition and philosophy. I don't see anything particularly sort of egregious or polemical there, so much as Benedict doing what he does, which is write good theology.
Sure. Good. Then what we want out of this is the kind of wisdom that he has shown over his many years of ministry, both as prefect of the CDF and also as Pope. And a lot of us have hoped he would do a little more writing after he stepped down. Where do you think this thing goes? I mean, is this tempest in a teapot, you think?
Well, of course it is. And what's really happening here is from my view, commentators on both sides of the Pan-Amazonian Synod debate about celibacy are using this as an opportunity to sort of make hay and make headlines and agitate for their point. What I found sort of particularly egregious is that those who have criticized Benedict for having written anything at all on this topic are some of the same people who praised him when he wrote a piece about the sexual abuse crisis last year. So there's some inconsistency there. What I honestly think will happen is that the book will be published and hopefully some people will read it. But I don't see this as a controversy having long-term repercussions so much as an opportunity for people with access to grind them.
Yeah. Okay. J.D., thank you so much. How do people stay in touch with your work?
Well, I hope they'll read us at CatholicNewsAgency.com or follow us, Catholic News Agency, on Facebook or CNA Live on Twitter. They can listen to our podcast. And from time to time, we're blessed to be here on the Al Cresta Show.
Thanks so much, J.D. We'll talk again.
Thanks a lot. All right.
J.D. Flynn, again, Editor-in-Chief of Catholic News Agency. I'm looking on some of the excerpts from the book. The book, by the way, is called From the Depths of Our Hearts, and we expect to have it released. Ignatius Press expects to release it in February. And you've got chapters there written individually by Pope Benedict XVI, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, and Cardinal Seurat, who himself is an outstanding writer. If you've not had the opportunity to read Cardinal Seurat's book, The Power of Silence, and two others, definitely worth reading. He writes largely in the area of, quote, spirituality. Benedict writes more in the field of biblical study and theology. But we're going to see it. We're going to see the whole thing in February. Ignatius Press will put it out there. And Cardinal Seurat is quoted, let me just find this quote, which I think gives you a good look at how he's seeing the importance of this book. The priesthood, here it is. The priesthood is going through a dark time, wounded by the revelation of so many scandals, disconcerted by the constant questioning of their consecrated celibacy. Many priests are tempted by the thought of giving up and abandoning everything. So you can see this book is certainly born out of a deep concern for the state of the priesthood right now. And these are two exceptionally well-qualified and gifted men to address this issue. I have to tell you, I'm actually looking forward to this biblical, because the chapter that Pope Emeritus Benedict has contributed actually goes all the way back to the Old Testament, looks at the concept of priesthood there, looks at it in the New Testament, looks at it in the Apostolic Fathers, and taking it up through history to the present day. That kind of overview is really valuable. And I think both men, or certainly Cardinal Seurat, is saying he really was moved to act before Pope Francis delivered his apostolic exhortation on the Pan-Amazonian Synod. In fact, he quotes St. Augustine. He says, "I cannot keep silent." And he then calls on bishops, priests, and laity to cease being, quote, impressed by poor arguments, theatrics, diabolical lies, and fashionable errors that want to devalue priestly celibacy, end of quote. There is something about this whole debate that I feel like I should refer to. One is the fact that the tradition of priestly celibacy in the Latin Church, the Western Church, is always recognized as a, quote, discipline of the church that can be changed at any time. Keep that in mind, but also keep in mind that over the last few pontificates, at least going back to Pope Paul VI, papal writings on celibacy have talked about it as something more. In fact, Cardinal Seurat says that it is priestly celibacy is ontologically related to priesthood, part of its very being.
Myler & Zipka, Certified Public Accountants, is proud to support Ave Maria Radio programming. Myler & Zipka offer great services to WDEO listeners in Metro Detroit for all of your accounting and tax needs. Call Ken Zipka and let him know you appreciate him helping to keep Catholic Radio alive in this area. Ken can be reached at 734-930-5500. That's 734-930-5500. Or on the web at mspccpa.com.
Emmaus Health, your trusted partner in healthcare, is pleased to announce the addition of two new physicians, Dr. Jennifer Brokowski in pediatrics and Dr. Scott Wacklowick in family medicine, giving us more capacity to serve you. Also, ask about our telemedicine option for even more convenience. Call 734-930-4020. Visit our website at emmaushealth.org or come visit us at Domino's Farms, Lobby L. Faith-inspired, dignity-affirming healthcare. Emmaus Health.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, we are between the season of Christ descending and his ascending, the incarnation and the resurrection. We turn then to the great spiritual masters of the desert to serve as our guides.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. The Catholic faith has enemies. We're Catholics. We have enemies. They are a danger to the faith. And yet we're called to defend the faith, to instruct the ignorant, and to love our enemies. These enemies abuse divine revelation. They abuse science and religion. They abuse our history and our past. They abuse power and wealth. We have to learn how to deal with our enemies by picking up a copy of my book, Dangers to the Faith. You can find it online at AveMariaRadio.net.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Each week we go into the Ave Maria CD library. We pull on a talk or two to see what our Lord might have to say to us. Most of these talks are recorded at area gatherings and conferences. Most of the speakers are nationally known. The topics are varied, but they are all centered on the Lord, and they all are worth your listening time. You're back from Mass. It's not yet dinner time. Why not sit back and join us? Be fed on the Lord. Listen this and every Sunday afternoon at 3 for Putting On the Mind of Christ on 990 WDEO in the Metro Detroit area and 1440 WMAX in the Saginaw Valley. Putting On the Mind of Christ is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Hey, Bill. I was looking at retiring soon, but I don't know what to do about filing for Social Security or what to do with my 401k.
Jim, you should call Joe Vitale at American Retirement Advisors. He helped us roll over a 401k to Catholic values-based investments, as well as helped us with our Social Security planning to maximize our benefit. You can give him a call at 855-756-5700 or go to his website at aradvisorsinc.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Two counties in southeast Michigan have set aside significant money to fund, quote, reproductive services, end quote, through Planned Parenthood. Citizens for Pro-Life Society and Pro-Life Michigan are organizing a protest for the next commissioner's meeting to make their voices heard. My guest, Dr. Monica Miller, director of Citizens for Pro-Life Society, will lay out for us what's happening here and what's coming up for the protest. Well, it's good to see you, by
the way. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Good to be with you, and a happy new year to you.
Yeah.
It's still pretty early in the new year,
it
so
is.
We can say that and still get away with it.
Well, that's right. These stories that came out, Washtenaw County, which is where Ann Arbor is located, $100,000,
right.
If I remember it, going to Planned Parenthood, and then Oakland County,
$500,000,
$500,000.
So between the two counties, we're almost, you know, headed towards $1 million disbursement to Planned Parenthood. And sad to say, there's a major Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in Ann Arbor on Professional Drive.
Right, I've been there.
And now they're the Ferndale Clinic, Ferndale, Michigan, which is in Oakland County, right on Woodward Avenue. Has started to do the chemical abortions, at least one day a week. The sad part of this is that, well, and a lot of things are sad about it, but Planned Parenthood really flew under the radar. There was little fanfare, little notice about this coming down the pike. And I would like to really warn all of the Ave Maria radio listeners here to be aware that this might be coming in your community, where your local county government may be deliberating right now to disperse significant money to your local Planned Parenthood.
This is significant. It just happened within a month.
December 12th, the Oakland County commissioners voted to release this money. I don't think the money's been dispersed yet, but it's going to be dispersed. And so anyway, listeners need to be aware of this. And I really would like to encourage listeners to get a hold of the county commissioner and scrutinize. Is this on an agenda that's coming up? Has Planned Parenthood put in a bid for a grant? Where are they? Where is your local county government on this particular subject?
Most of us don't think about this.
Who would have thought about it? I think this is actually unprecedented. And Planned Parenthood is doing this because of the reversal of the Title X. And so these county governments they think that they're doing something altruistic, right?
Right.
We don't want to leave women high and dry when it comes to their health care needs. And so Planned Parenthood is first in line because they are very good at packaging who they are, selling the public, this facade that they are all about women's health, and when all is said and done, they are about abortion.
Right.
Let's crunch the numbers on that. Recently they put out their annual report for the years of 2018-2019, mm-hmm. and a whopping 345,672, so we can actually round that off, 346,000 abortions. Wow, that's an astronomical number.
Yeah.
Were performed out of Planned Parenthood abortion facilities in the years 2018-2019. So that means about a 10,000 body count increase over what they had in their previous annual report. Also, let's
so
put this in context.
They're doing about 1,000 abortions a day.
They're doing actually 947 abortions every day. 28,000.
And that's on a 7-day work week.
Yes, and 28 right, and 28,000 every month. They are the largest abortion provider in the United States.
No one comes close.
No, they are far and away. Nobody can touch them. They're really performing almost, and at this point I might even be able to say, one-third of all abortions
that's
in America
are
coming out of a Planned
Parenthood
clinic.
We've had a reduced
clinic.
In number of abortions,
but
still, you're thinking 3,000 a day.
Yes, but their numbers have increased while the national rate has decreased.
Right, right.
So when, you know, here's the simple argument is this. No entity, no city government, no county government, no state government, no federal government should be releasing funds, giving money to an organization that discriminates against an entire people group. That is their mission. That is their chief mission. And that is what they are about. And, I mean, would we be giving money to an organization that discriminated against African Americans? Oh, but they do a lot of other good things.
No,
of course not. Okay? So when you get into these meetings, and before I forget, we have a protest coming up. And it's a two-layered protest.
It's January 22nd.
January 22nd, okay. On the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, so how appropriate. We should be out there picketing no matter what anyway. So we will be gathering here in Michigan in the city of Pontiac on the grounds of the county government, which is at, and so the commissioners, their address is 1200 North Telegraph Road. And the building is a very odd building. It's actually circular. It's a circular building.
Huh.
And that is where the county commissioners will be meeting at 7 o'clock on January 22nd. So that's a week from this Wednesday.
And you'll be getting there when?
We're going to gather for a picket in front of that building from 6 o'clock p.m. until about maybe 10 minutes to 7. Then everybody, and even if you can't come to the picket, you should come to the meeting. That meeting starts at 7 o'clock. We want to fill that meeting hall. We want every single seat taken up by a pro-lifer, and we want to be able to address this commission, the commissioners, and tell them how we feel about what they just did.
This is important because we may be seeing a new strategy that Planned Parenthood has put in place to offset what they're losing, right?
Yeah, exactly, to offset the loss of the Title X. But here's the thing. Planned Parenthood got $600 million in aid, in almost $1 billion, $600 million. This is not an organization that's strapped for cash.
Right.
Okay, and here's the thing. Even if the county executives and the commissioners give you the business, oh, but we've told them that they can't use this money to fund abortion procedures. That is a total deception, because here's how it works. They could do the upkeep on the abortion clinics,
right.
Maintenance on those buildings,
right.
Pay the salaries of those who are involved in the abortion procedures, even pay the salary of their abortionists with that money.
It's an abortion facility, right? So, I mean, to say that money's not going towards abortion ignores the obvious.
Right, and there's only one Planned Parenthood clinic in the entire Oakland County. Oakland County is huge.
Yeah.
And very densely populated here in Michigan. And they have one clinic that does abortions once a week, the chemical abortions. So they honestly needed $500,000 for the upkeep of, and to fund so-called women's health care out of that one clinic. Think of the other good things that could have been done with that money.
Yeah.
The pregnancy help center. There are more pregnancy help centers in Oakland County than there are Planned Parenthood facilities.
Yeah.
None of that money went to any of those places,
right,
or the community health centers, or any of the other social service agencies that could have benefited from that $500,000. This is a politically motivated, we want to support, we believe in the mission of Planned Parenthood, and that's why they got that money.
Right, exactly. And if anybody doubts that, still doubts that Planned Parenthood's business is abortion, why don't you tell us the story of the firing of the short-lived
CEO. 8 months, or her 8 month tenure, Dr. Nguyen. This was a very interesting controversy when Cecile Richards retired after maybe decades as the head of Planned Parenthood. They put in a doctor. They actually got a medical doctor now to be the head of Planned Parenthood, Dr. Nguyen. She was Asian ethnicity, and she wanted to shift to, shall we say, realign Planned Parenthood's mission to emphasize that we are an organization that offers health care and also, yes, we provide abortions. So she wanted to downplay the emphasis on Planned Parenthood as an abortion provider. This created enormous controversy with their board of trustees, mm-hmm. and within 8 months, she was out of a job. And I did write an article for Crisis Magazine.
Which we'll have in the guest archives.
Explaining, the dynamics of how this happened and what does it mean, okay? Planned Parenthood was very clear. Our primary, they even use that word, our priority, our primary mission is abortion.
Yeah.
That's what they said. And by the way, when we get into the county commissioners, the Oakland County Commissioners meeting, 7 p.m., folks, 1200 North Telegraph Road in Pontiac.
January 22nd.
That's what we're going to tell those commissioners.
Right.
When you fund Planned Parenthood, you fund abortion.
Right.
And you got to own that.
That's right. I mean, she said, Nguyen says she was criticized because she did not prioritize abortion enough.
Enough.
She lost her job because she didn't prioritize abortion enough. She said she wanted to counter those who associate the organization with only abortion.
Mm.
And so she was looking for a public relations coup here, and they didn't want to touch it.
No, she was not their cup of tea.
Yeah.
And so hopefully she's gone back to private practice, and she's, who knows, maybe this will be a wake-up call to Dr. Nguyen on the subject of abortion.
Yeah.
But I really want to encourage people to come out. I feel very strongly we have to have a good showing here. We need 200 people to be in that hall. And that's at 7 p.m., January 22nd, at the Oakland County, the next meeting, a week from this Wednesday. We need to fill that hall. Come to the picket first if you can, but the priority for us is get into that meeting at 7 o'clock.
All right. We're going to have that posted for you, too, on the AveMariaRadio.net website. It'll be there in the upper left on the home page. One of the sliders
It's on our Facebook page, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society.
On your Facebook page?
Yep.
All right, very good. Monica, thanks.
Thank you.
We'll continue to keep you informed and notified about this upcoming picket. I'm Al Cresta.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Want a simple way to add years to your life? Practice optimism. In a study of over 70,000 people, researchers at Boston University found that optimistic people lived up to 15% longer and were 70% more likely to live past 85 than less optimistic people. Optimism is the belief that we can make good things happen, even when things are going badly. Optimism isn't a trait you have or you don't. It's a skill we can all cultivate. As St. Paul says in Romans 8:28, we know that all things work for the good of those who love God. Get in the habit of asking God to help you make good things happen, even out of the bad things life throws at you. That simple habit might unlock the secret to a long and abundant life. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. Where do you get information about God? How can you be sure what you read or what you are told by authorities is true? For if the things we are told about Christianity are true, tremendous demands are put upon our lives. And to say we believe them requires that we live them. Elton Trueblood said,
we should be foolish not to use all the intelligence we can muster in order to try to know whether Christianity is true. To fail to give our minds loyally to this inquiry would not be so much irreverent as stupid.
It's important, therefore, that we get and understand the facts, evidences, and reasons for Christianity. Our life here and for eternity depends on such efforts. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under Resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
My dad, sharp as a tack, but getting him out for a dentist trip got harder every year. When he moved to the senior residence where he lives now, Dr. Mansour's portable dental service was a godsend. Dr. Mansour comes to wherever the homebound patient may be, whether in a nursing facility or the comfort of home. All the services you'd expect in a dentist office brought straight to the patient's door. Call 586-873-5567. That's 586-873-5567 or portabledentalservices.com.
The next third Sunday concert of the season at Old St. Mary's Detroit in Greektown will be on January 19th at 2:30 p.m. and will feature a program of works for violin, cello, and organ, with compositions by Romantic composers Reinberg, Werman, and Becker. There will be a free will offering and free guarded parking. For more information, please see oldstmarysdetroit.com. That's oldstmarysdetroit.com. See you at the concert.
And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Kressler. Over this last generation, we've seen what is sometimes called the divorce revolution, which begins to gain momentum, it appears, in the 60s, and really goes into full sway in the 1970s. And it's only in the late 80s or early 90s that all of a sudden people are beginning to reassert that, you know, all things being equal, it's best if parents stay together for the children's sake. I do recall when I was a very young man, maybe junior high age or so, people talking about divorcing for the children's sake. Well, that, again, I'm speaking here about popular conversation. And again, it's only, again, early 90s, I'd say, where that finally becomes clear that parents ought to stay together for the children's sake. Now, there's new story out saying that divorce rates in Duval County, Florida, which includes the fourth biggest city in the state, Jacksonville, has experienced a stunning 28% plunge between 2015 and 2017. With me now to talk about this and how significant is this drop in the divorce rate is Dr. Gregory Popchak, director of the Pastoral Solutions Institute, a Catholic telecounseling practice, providing marriage and mental health counseling services to Catholics worldwide. He and his wife, Lisa, author and co-author 20 books on relationships and spirituality, and host daily the radio program More to Life, produced by Ave Maria Radio and carried through the EWTN Radio Network. Hey, Greg, good to have you back.
Good to be here, Al. Thank you.
This is an interesting story. I mean, it's it looks at this one county, but is this county in any way representative of the nation?
So Jacksonville, Florida is the main city in Duval County. It's the fourth biggest city in the state, and it had one of the highest divorce rates in the country in 2013, 2014, when this project got underway. So what this group, organized by Communio, is the organization that sponsored this project. And what they did was they created a structure, I'm going to kind of lead with this,
sure,
that ultimately decreased the divorce rate in that county by 28% in 2 years.
I mean, how do you do that proactively?
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So here's what they did, and it's ingenious. I've actually had a chance to speak with the director, J.P. Gantz, at Communio. Really brilliant concept here.
He's the CEO, right?
Of Communio, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And interfaith group or interdenominational group. He's Catholic, but he has several evangelicals that they work with, and mm-hmm. it's a big sort of think tank, religious think tank. So what they did was they got about a network of about 50 churches or so in this Jacksonville, Florida area, and they asked them to put on whatever program they wanted, but it needed to be a marriage preparation program, a marriage enrichment program, and a marriage strengthening program for couples who were going through difficulties. And they kind of were a clearinghouse. They gathered lots of different published programs that existed already, and they just said, here, pick a program that works for you. And so they didn't produce any new content. They just were a clearinghouse, and churches chose programs that they wanted to run in their church. So they created this network of about 50 churches, and then what they did was they used predictive analytics for internet use to drive people to these programs. What they did was they looked at couples who had gotten divorced, people who had gotten divorced within the last year,
mm-hmm.
and they looked at their internet behavior. And they said, well, let's operate under the assumption that people whose marriages are in trouble are going to have similar internet behavior.
Right. Okay.
And so what they did was they looked for people who had similar searches in their internet behavior than divorced couples had. And specifically, there were a number of different factors, but three that stood out, and this is going to be interesting. Searching for either frozen foods or prepared meals was one.
Okay.
Searching for gym memberships.
Yeah.
And thirdly, searching for adventure travel. I have no idea what any of those things really have to do with, but that was consistent across folks who were recently divorced. So what they did was they looked for people who had those behaviors in their internet searches, as well as several other factors that they found. And what they did then was they looked for people within a 5-mile radius of the different churches that were operating this program, and they sent out social media blasts advertising these programs that the churches were doing. And it drove something like 2 million visitors to their clearinghouse website and brought the divorce rate down in Duval County by 30%, 28% in between the years of 2015 and 2017.
Oh.
It's unbelievable.
Isn't it?
it's staggeringly ingenious and also incredibly simple in some ways, and powerfully effective.
And so now the next question is, where do you go from here?
Well, they're working hard to replicate this in other communities.
Yeah.
And he has a real heart. As I said, the director, J.P. Gantz, is a Catholic himself and would very much like to work with Catholic churches and dioceses in promoting this program. They actually have a program for church building as well, which uses a similar model, kind of based on the idea of, we can bring more people in if churches are equipped to give people what they need. And so the building these relationship and family building programs and then promoting them really does bring new people to the parishes that also then, increase donations, increase
sure.
active membership.
Right,
So it's really a powerful program that I really encourage dioceses and parishes to look into. The challenge he's had, this program has had in getting rooted in the Catholic Church is that, you know, what he said, it's interesting that in the evangelical circles, they first want to know, does it work? And then they'll sort of ask, how does it fit with our faith?
Right.
In Catholic circles, they don't ask either of those things. They ask, well, what bishop is supporting it?
Yeah. This is actually one of our great illnesses. It's a sickness within the church. Evangelicals are very pragmatic. That's one reason they've been eating our lunch.
And then the second objection he runs into is people will actually say, what will we do with all the people that come? Which is also discouraging to me because that's the business we should be in.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem we want to have.
Yeah, so we need to, you know, but I would encourage any listener who is in a position to do something about this to please reach out to them because they're well funded it's not very costly to do the program in your area.
So this rest, though, I want to make sure I understand. Mm-hmm. They basically do kind of an internet profile
mm-hmm.
of who people who are visiting frozen food,
adventure travel,
food,
gym membership.
Yeah. Those people going to those websites, and then they
within a 5-mile radius of a particular church that's offering these marriage building programs,
and they buy advertising then to get it
popping
up.
They create social media advertisements,
right? Right.
And they you know, basically send out announcements that these things are going in your area. So it's no pressure. You know, they're not
right.
You know, making people sign up for anything. It's just making people aware that this is going on in your area.
Yeah, that is really.
And you don't have to belong to the church. You don't have to be a believer. You know, this is just here for you.
Yeah.
You know, and people are, you know, maybe they're praying for a sign. Maybe they're just thinking about their marriage, and suddenly this thing comes up. Look at this. Isn't this, you know,
yeah.
fortunate,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And then they take advantage of it. Like I said, within the time that they initiated this, 2 million people accessed their Clearinghouse website to look for the churches in their area that were providing this. Something like 150,000 people involved themselves in these programs in the first 6 months.
I mean,
and I'll say it's super inexpensive, too. Like, okay, so under George Bush Jr., he set aside $150 million for marriage-building programs. Obama set aside $75 million. And the government-sponsored marriage enrichment programs cost about $11,000 per couple to run. This cost $45 per couple to run. and the thing about it is, okay, so it's so cost efficient, and there's such an incredible return on the investment too. Like I said, because so many people are grateful that the church is offering these programs, they want to then follow up with becoming a member of the church and supporting the church and being active in the church. It's a tremendous opportunity for evangelization. The point he makes, though, is that there's a tiny percentage of the budget, and in most churches, and this is especially true of Catholic churches, for marriage and family enrichment. In our own diocese, the Diocese of Steubenville, 3% of the budget, only 3% of the budget goes to marriage and family ministry.
Yeah.
And that's actually significant compared to other dioceses who don't even, some major dioceses don't have a marriage and family life office.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, it's getting smaller and smaller as dioceses are paying out for the scandal. The first program that tends to go is the marriage and family ministry program.
You know, and which is really a shame because, as we've spoken so often here, if you don't have a strong domestic church, you don't have a strong parish church. So.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And so, you know, so we're not only as a church not meeting the needs of our people by helping them live godly marriage and family lives, we're cutting our own throats by not giving people the resources they need and the reason they need to kind of come to church and learn about how we as Catholics really have the truth to enable them to live a godly, joyful, loving, intimate, long-lasting marriage, and it's you know, it's so incredibly important. I mean, that's the history of missionary work, right? You go to a village and you find out that they need clean water and they need schools,
and you
provide those services, and you provide them in a faithful context, and suddenly you've got a whole village that believes in Jesus, right?
Right.
Well, today what people need is education on relationships. relationship. We're in the third generation of the culture of divorce. Nobody knows how to have a long-lasting marriage. Nobody knows how to have a satisfying marriage. Nobody knows how to have a family life. The church is equipped to teach that. Why aren't we doing this?
Yeah.
It would be good for us. It would be good for couples. It would be good for the kingdom of God.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be any downside to it at all.
There really isn't.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's super inexpensive, and it's frankly easy to do. And you don't even have to create a program. There are plenty of other programs out there. Just pick one that you like, do it, and it'll have a benefit.
Yeah.
And doing anything is almost worth it.
Right, right. You don't have to produce new content. That's tremendous. Are there other cities that they're applying this to? Are they going forward with more?
He asked me not to share some of those future cities. But the key, they did do this in two others. They did it in Akron, they did it in Phoenix. They didn't have as much success because they weren't able to get the church network up as strong as they were in Jacksonville. But that's what it depends on.
Greg, thanks so much. How do people stay in touch with you?
CatholicCounselors.com.
All right. Dr. Gregory Popcheck, I'm Al Cresta.
Are you looking for an affordable option for your health care? You feel compelled to support pro-life efforts in our country? Then now is the time for you to join CMF Curo. CMF Curo is the country's first healthcare sharing experience that engages church teachings by offering truly pro-life healthcare. CMF Curo members experience healthcare that's ethically consistent with church teachings and rooted in Catholic community. Learn more about CMF Curo and find Catholic healthcare options at mycatholichealthcare.com.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck on the diminishing influence of God on our culture and ultimately in us.
One of the reasons why the church today is not having the impact it can have and should have is we've accommodated too much to the culture. Sunday has just become another day. The whole culture has just sort of transformed it and said, hey, there's nothing special about it. Now, the world is going to do what the world's going to do. But Christians have to be wise and not be conformed to the patterns of this world. That's a pattern in this world that's destructive. It's destructive because, one, it offends God, first of all. God says, keep holy the Sabbath. Keep holy the Lord's Day. And so many people have stopped going to church. Why? Because they're just busy. Why? Doing what? Playing golf, watching sports. Jesus loves our sentiments and our feelings, but he also looks at us seriously and says, do you seek to obey my commandments? Where are my commandments in your life? Are they a burden? Are you afraid they're going to take away your fun in life and are going to ruin your weekend? Do you resist them? Or do you hunger after them? Are they a light for your path?
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30, and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me. Let me mention, too, tomorrow, Teresa Tomeo is conducting another of her free webinars. This is going to be Why Pro-Life is Indeed Pro-Woman, and Teresa is going to be joined by Dr. Alveda King, Director of Civil Rights for the Unborn. So we've got all the information available at avemariaradio.net. It's in the slider in the upper left corner of the homepage. That's Media Matters with Teresa Tomeo hosting a free webinar tomorrow. The topic is Why Pro-Life is Indeed Pro-Woman. So look forward to that. Coming up next hour, we're going to spend time looking at one of the most interesting, complicated men of the founding generation of the United States, Benjamin Franklin. You know, he is held out as one of the kind of prototypical American leaders, right? He published an early autobiography. He was a printer. He was a writer. He was an inventor. He was a statesman. He was a diplomat. He was an extraordinary man. And his religious views were themselves inventive. Let's put it that way. One of the fun stories that's often told about Franklin is how he reached in his pocket during a financial appeal by the evangelist George Whitefield. Franklin, who really didn't buy into George Whitefield's Calvinist presentation of the gospel, still thought it had the gospel had good public and social consequences. So he thought he'd put some money to support Whitefield. It's a funny story, but there's much behind it about the changing American attitudes towards Christianity, even in the founding generation. So we're going to be talking about that next hour, and as always, we'll have Dr. Thomas Kidd's book on Ben Franklin available in our online bookstore at AveMariaRadio.net. And, you know, there's something else, too. Some gotten some notices here about the passing of the famed British cultural and political conservative Roger Scruton. Tomorrow, one of his doctoral students will be joining us to talk a little bit about his contribution. Much better known in England than here in the United States, but even that difference is instructive. Stay with me. We've got another hour coming up. I'm Al Cresta.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.